Hello, everybody. Welcome. It's Sunday afternoon in London, and this is Lizzie and Justin. We are here again for Turning Towards Life, our third space project. And welcome. We've just been having a big giggle here behind the scenes, which has been very lovely, because we've been teaching our professional coaching course this weekend, which is why we're on a rather different timescale. And in the midst of 5 days of teaching, we completely forgot how to do Turning Towards Life. We had no idea how to begin, how to get the technology working. But we've made it. We've remembered. It's only our 150-somethingth time. We're really, really delighted to be here. And welcome to all of you, the many of you who are joining us afresh. If this is the first time you've been with us live or listening or watching later, we're so glad to have you with us. And you could consider yourself part of this conversation rather than an audience to it. And if you actually want to contribute to the conversation, find your way to our Turning Towards Life Facebook group and ask to join, and we'll welcome you in. And there's quite a sweet and powerful conversation that very often goes on in the comments underneath each of the videos here. So you're welcome to all of that. And Lizzie, I'm so pleased to be doing this today. Exuberantly joyful, I have to say.
Me too. And part of the joke that was going on before as well was that we've been hearing from people that sometimes they are driving along with their teenage children in the back on the way to school, and they surreptitiously put Turning Towards Life on to try and generate a different kind of conversation. So Justin came up with an idea that we could surreptitiously take suggestions of things that people want us to say, and then you press play when you're like doing something with your husband or your wife or your children or somebody, and then we have to say the thing that you want to say to them, but you always argue about it or something. So we're taking suggestions if you would like to employ us as your sayers of the things that can't be said. Please post it in the comments, and we will have the conversation for you, and you can press play whenever you like on a car journey. That's our new idea.
Yes, that's our new idea. We decided, though, pretty quickly that this would be manipulative and exploitative. So,
which is why we like the idea so much, yeah. Because that is what this is all about. A good dose of manipulation. So yeah, that's what we were laughing as well, imagining us taking suggestions and then fashioning conversations out that are purposefully aimed at certain people. It's very funny. So anyway, today is a joyful day, clearly, and we're in the mood for some happiness and fun. And today we're bringing to you this lovely poem called Angels by Mary Oliver. I got given Mary Oliver's amazing anthology for my birthday back in June. And so she's by my bed, and this one popped out and I felt like it really called to me. So we're going to read as usual. And if you're joining us for the first time, this is an unrehearsed live conversation with a source at the beginning and then a conversation between us. And we see where it goes, basically. We see what this source leads us into as a conversation, as an ongoing conversation. So each week we have a different source, but there are threads through this, I'm sure, that keep reappearing, and it's a complete joy to keep threading it all together and staying in conversation with all of you as well. So here we go. This is Angels by Mary Oliver. You might see an angel any time and anywhere. Of course, you have to open your eyes to a kind of second level, but it's not really hard. The whole business of what's reality and what isn't has never been solved and probably never will be. So I don't care to be too definite about anything. I have a lot of edges called perhaps, and almost nothing you can call certainty. For myself, but not for other people. That's a place you can get into. Not entirely anyway. Sorry, that's a place you just can't get into. Not entirely anyway, other people's heads. I'll just leave you with this. I don't care how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. It's enough to know that for some people they exist and that they dance.
So as is our practice, I'm going to read it too. But I'm going to say something first. If, like me, you are coming into this conversation having sat down at lunchtime, which is the time that we're recording this, just after lunchtime, and read the news, which is what I did. Reading the news very rarely points this way. See if you can feel into the invitation that, the particular invitation to those of us who've just done that, that Mary Oliver is making. You might see an angel anytime and anywhere. Of course, you have to open your eyes to a kind of second level, but it's not really hard. The whole business of what's reality and what isn't has never been solved and probably never will be. So I don't care to be too definite about anything. I have a lot of edges called perhaps, and almost nothing you can call certainty. For myself, but not for other people. That's a place you just can't get into. Not entirely anyway, other people's heads. I'll just leave you with this. I don't care how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. It's enough to know that, for some people, they exist and that they dance.
So, thank you, Justin. It's so delightful, this poem. And the way that it hits me is possibly the transition that I've been through in my life from feeling like there was such thing as black and white to now living in a world where everything is a shade of grey. And the more I learn, the more greyness there is. And how freeing to let everybody have what they have and to not feel like I am trying to make the world into a way that I think it should be or something, or turn people into something I think they should be, but to let there be an allowance for whatever people are like to be just okay. And it feels really respectful to other people, of course, but it feels very respectful to me, because what it does is it allows, I can feel as I say it, it allows my energy, my force in the world to concentrate on my force and to stop trying to meddle with the world, but play my part fully and see what this energy is, what this soul is calling for, and act out of that without having my tentacles in too many places that shift me off. What's sacred to me? What is mine to do? What's calling to me?
There's a great freedom, I think, Lizzie, isn't there, in this part about not getting into other people's heads.
No.
I love that she says there's a place you just can't get into, not entirely anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a way, of course, if we couldn't imagine or feel what might be going on for another person, we'd all be spun out separate from one another. So it's not like that. But the work of correcting other people's understanding, correcting other people's interpretation is futile work.
Mm-hmm.
And what I could feel in this poem is that there's something deeply invitational here, because of course, sort of the paradox is that Mary Oliver is trying to get into our hearts and into our heads, right?
Yeah.
I mean, otherwise, why would you write poetry? Why would you speak?
Yes.
Unless there was a possibility that what you say and do might impact other people and might open, particularly when it's words. You know, mm-hmm. if I care for you with physical actions, it's not quite the same thing, but to use language.
Mm-hmm.
And so I taking feeling the fullness of with this at the moment is the possibility that what we might be is invitational to one another. Mm. Then instead of being corrective to one another, we might see that in a way everything has the possibility of being invitation. And I think that that's that might be what this angel part of the poem is about, is that this is why I mentioned the news, because I sat down at lunch. We'd been teaching and I was sitting outside and it was very lovely. I thought, oh, I'll just I'm interested in the world, and of course we're living right now in extended times where we can see, I think what's happening, one way of talking about it, is we can see how uncertain the world always is. We can see how unpredictable it always is. It's apparent to us. I'm not sure that anything is more predictable than it's ever, unpredictable than it's ever been. It's just, it's here. Mm-hmm. And it's here in the pandemic, and it's here in politics, and it's here in the environment, and it's here in, like, we're, it's really here. And that, for me, is very easily a sort of, I can feel myself contracting and getting very small. And then Mary Oliver comes along and she says, but let me show you a way in which everything can be an invitation. Everything can be, that there is a way of seeing that has truth to it. And then there are other ways of seeing that also have truth to it. And they can call us in into life.
Yeah.
And there's nothing in what she's saying that says give up the first thing that you can see, but she's bringing us into the invitation of the second thing. And the second thing is, what comes from really not knowing, and knowing that in the we really don't know, that there's a vast range of responses that are called for from us, including joy, and including loving one another, and including creating things. And that we bring one another into the orbit of that. Oh, I know the thing, let's see if I can say this clearly. So the thing I think about the language of angels is that they're not just anything here. I think they're the way it feels for me and my body in reading the poem and hearing you, Lizzie, is it's that which calls us into our fullness and into our bringing ourselves and into our gifts, bringing our gifts to one another, bringing what we have to bring to one another, and that is what they're waiting all the time. If we'll let ourselves feel it and see it, and then we can be that for one another when we give up all of the sort of strangulation of one another's positions that we get into on the other side of things.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. And I, as you're talking, I'm remembering as well, there's a place in this that helps me with my cynicism. So I noticed that particularly just the word angel, I've spent so many years saying, well, I've never seen an angel. So I've got this kind of probably childlike way of relating to angels, like a little kind of cutout thing that hangs off the Christmas tree or something. And yet what I know about myself is in the moments that I've been in most terror and most peril, I've always prayed to angels. And I remember somebody saying to me once that what I'm most cynical about is probably what I care about the most. And I feel like it invites us into this kind of openness, this kind of allowing, that when we find a certainty in ourselves, like there aren't any angels, what I'm receiving from this poem is a kind of voluntary entertaining of the perhapsness of things. So as soon as I hit a piece of certainty, what if I could employ my capacity for perhaps and let that cultivate in me a kind of fluidity, I guess, that's very different to certainty, that can contain the certainty at the top, if you like, but this bowl of maybe-ness, let that be there too, so that I'm not held on the point of a pin, but that I get to live in the world in a way that's open, and that is not trying to shut things down all the time. Because I get the part of me that wants everything to get narrowed down into just something I can manage, like a definition of something, or a yes, this is true and that's not true. Like I can handle that. But what I can't handle is ambiguity and complexity and when there's no clean lines on things. So, of course, the certainty button gets pushed just to make me feel safe. So once I'm onto the fact that I'm frightened, and that only because I'm frightened do I need to make things really, really small so I can manage them, because that's kind of what I think I am in that moment. I'm trying to make everything the same size as my small, fearful self. If I can get onto that, I've at least got a chance of taking a breath and widening myself bigger than the fear that I'm feeling. or different than, or in addition to the fear, something else coming forth, so that what I think needs to be smallened can actually breathe. And then something really different happens with life, where a faith can come forth, an openness, an unstuckness, creativity, life force, all these different things can come, because I'm not so blinkered and so tiny in myself, and therefore in my perception of things, that the world is like that big, which gets more and more and more terrifying. The smaller it gets in response to the fear, the more frightened I become. And then in the faith and in the softening, I don't feel so frightened anymore.
It's really moving to hear you say that, Lizzie, feeling myself soften as I hear you speak. And it occurred to me whilst you were speaking that our, this is going to be hard to say properly, but I'm going to do my best. Our certainty can extend even to what we think we're uncertain about. So if I go, for example, I was thinking about being unwell, which is a big theme for the world right now. Of course, it's a big theme always. And if when I'm unwell, I go, well, I know X and Y is going to happen. I'm already in certainty. But I can also make the mistake of going, well, I don't know what's going to happen, which is my secret way of saying, if I give up my fear that things might not go the way I want them to go, I can make them go the way I want to go, because there'll be an angel hidden there. So everything's going to be fine. That would be a terrible mistake, because it would be just covering up. It would be a way of turning away from what is. And I think that what I hear in what you're saying, and what in Mary Oliver's words, is the possibility that whatever you might call an angel might appear in really, really unexpected places. So I might be in a situation that I desperately want to change, and of course I could try and convince myself that it will be different. But the moment I let go of, it will definitely be this way and it will definitely be that way, and I know everything about what's of value here, there's the possibility, for example, that I might be deeply touched by the look of a loved one, or I might find a capacity in my own heart to say or do something that I never knew that I had the chance to do. Or perhaps somebody who I haven't seen for a long time comes into my path and we reconnect, or perhaps, who knows? I mean, the list of things is endless. And it seems to me that's this beautiful line at the end, which is to know that for some people they exist and that they dance, is right in the, what happens if we give up our certainty and our cynicism, but then what happens if we don't demand that gets replaced by a different kind of certainty, that everything's just going to be fine the way I want it, which I think is very often the trap, which only leads back to cynicism and despair again. Like, it might be terrible and beautiful at the same time. It might be frightening and opening, or it might be frightening and very little else until we find out what it is to be in the middle of being frightened for a while. That kind of move is what I feel invited into here.
The words that just came to me when you were talking, Justin, was, you know, what can I do to let go of my agenda for things that aren't mine to have an agenda on? You know, like, and how do I discern what that is? So how do I give up trying to control things so that I feel okay about things, but cultivate a different kind of relationship to life and to the world, where I can be a participant and I can know the difference between what I can have an impact on and what I can't, and then fully inhabit the place where I can have an impact and let myself be poured through that, and whatever my life forces are, have an impact there. And if we have these finite lives, which, of course, who knows what the hell's going on and how long a life really is and all that stuff, but it, one where we're embodied and we have hands and feet and seems to last, I don't know, between now and 100 or something. If there is this finite time that we get to be in this particular form and act in the ways that we feel are available to us, it seems that to know that, to know what's mine and what I can do and what I can't do for this moment is really helpful, because I can see myself wasting a lot of time and energy trying to have things go the way that I think they should go. I meaning like a small I, versus the big I, which is a self that's not so interested in what I want, but what the world is asking for. And if I could serve that, I can feel in the saying of it that I might feel satisfied. You know, I've spent so many years being dissatisfied because I think I've been, we said this before, didn't we, barking up the right tree but on the wrong side of the tree. And this seems to be like a way of walking to the side of the tree that has satisfaction in it, which is to live in service to what life is asking and responding as fully as I can and not leaking everything anywhere, so that my power, if you like, my what I'm supposed to be doing and contributing can come cleanly and fiercely into the world without it being dragged all over the shop and dissipating. And that feels like what this invitation is to me.
Really, Lizzie, struck by your language of being dissatisfied and participation. And I could see how, I mean, exactly as you're saying, one way to be in life, which I know very well in myself, is life has to be a particular way. Apparently I'm meant to be in charge of that because I'm in the middle of things. And when life isn't that way, I get frightened, dissatisfied, resentful, angry, all kinds of stuff. And then when it is that way, I can feel happy. And it's such an inaccurate description of what's going on in the world, in the way that Mary Oliver says the whole business of what's reality and what isn't has never been solved and probably never will be. Like, I'm so certain when I'm that way that that's how the world is. Like, I'm in the center of it.
Yeah.
But that's probably the furthest from the most accurate description. So I was really taken by your language of participation that we've come to again and again, which is reflected here in Mary Oliver's work about dancing, which is to wonder what it is that we're dancing with as we move through our lives. Instead of, I'm meant to be God or something and just have the world the way I want, which is the source of such and so much of our difficulty. What happens if we dance with who knows what it is that we're dancing with, and we end whatever we're dancing with learning the steps together as we go, and we find ourselves part of something way, way bigger that we're not, that we matter in, but we're not, and which we can, to participate is to shape something in a way by the way that we dance in it, but it's not to be in charge of it. So there's an enormous amount of agency and freedom, and an enormous amount that we have no control over whatsoever. But what we do have a lot that we can bring ourselves to is how we dance, and even to consider it, that this might be dancing at all.
Yeah.
And then we can get out of this polarity of, I'm meant to be giant and in charge of the world. Sort of my secret project is to be in charge of the world, or I'm nothing and the world is crushing me at every moment. Mm. Those two, which are such difficult places, and so we often are there, those two dissolve into something else, which is more like what's called for now and what's called for now and what's called for now. And you know, I really saw this, I went out walking just a little bit earlier, it's just around my neighbourhood here, and in this time that we've not been travelling, I've been feeling into the feeling that I get very often when I travel somewhere new and I step into the place and it's like, oh, somewhere new, I'm so happy to be here, it's so exciting, so interesting, and all of those kind of things. And seeing that that is a sort of demand I make of places, that they have to be a way for me to feel this sort of delight and intrigue and wonder and everything. So I went out and practiced walking in this place where I live as if it were completely mysterious and magically rich, full of hidden angels. And it's the same place with its same problems and same everything. And something new felt like it started to reveal itself to me, like a way I could be in this that wasn't escape, was being here, wasn't turning away from everything, but was a kind of welcome to whatever happened to be here that I could then respond to.
Mm. Yeah, I love that, Justin. It's making me feel like I'm the determinant of my experience, not the new thing I just saw. So instead of like giving the power to the new place, the newness can be born in me and I can find it here. It's not, I don't have to put a demand on the world or do lots of things or go far from home to experience the thing I would like to experience, which might be newness or it might be oldness, whatever we're seeking, it can be close to home. Which, who knows, like, as we say, perhaps there's a lot of perhapses going on at the moment. Maybe it's just a gift that we're really close to home a lot, all the time now. You know, as this goes on for longer and longer, this, as you say, revealed uncertainty that's already always been there anyway, we're just right, it's on the news and we're thinking about it a lot. What's really going on, I do not know. I mean, I really don't know. And the longer I'm in this and the longer I read the news, I know less and less and less about what on earth is going on. And when you said that about stepping out of your door and experiencing your neighbourhood anew, that sounds to me like complete brilliance. And you wouldn't be doing that if this wasn't going on. I'm not trying to say it's all fine because look at this or something, because clearly there's a lot of not fineness, but we don't know what's going on all kinds of levels. We don't know what's going on, and to find our own agency in it, to find our own interpretation having power for our experience to be impacted, is really empowering. And it's an opposite story to what's being peddled, that everything's been taken away from us. So I'm really feeling grateful and breathed into by that, and like it could be, I could interpret this thing as a nudge into creativity, a nudge into a new world that I might create because of the constraints that are here.
Just struck me whilst you were speaking about that, Lizzie, that angels in many traditions are not sweet. You know, this is not a poem about sweet, shiny, flowery things. Angels can be fierce and dark and powerful. And in a way, the other way of looking at this, which I think is implied in our conversation, is we can see depth and significance and great gift any time we might come across that. We might see that the ordinariness of our streets was born of billions of years of an unfolding universe and millions of years, hundreds of millions of years of evolution and hundreds of thousands of years of human culture, all in an unbroken chain, and here we are.
Yeah.
And it's got fierce and terrible, awesome, beautiful aspects to it all the time. And you know, when you were talking about cynicism before, in a way it's felt to me like cynicism is, and if this is how it is for you, is it's what renders the world flat. We kind of step ourselves out of it and go, oh, the world's, there's nothing here, but look at what's here. And that's also the call of this time, is to not flatten the world because it's difficult, to not flatten it because it's unpredictable, but to invest it with a kind of sacredness.
So Justin, I think this is our ending time, and Vespa's just come in the room and wanting to see me. So thank you everybody for listening and for being with us in this wonderful angels poem. And we will be back at probably a normal time next week, Justin.
I think so.
And it's been a delight to be in this with you, Justin. Thank you. And may we long do this as a response to whatever's going on in the world.
For sure. Thank you, Lizzie. Bye-bye, everyone.
See you next week, everybody.